Welcome to Stunt Stories. I'm Corey Eubanks. You know, as a professional stunt performer, you like to be able to share with your friends and your family some of your greatest accomplishments. But it seems the majority of the time, at least for me throughout my career, I was sharing the majority of my screw-ups, my mistakes, the stunts that didn't go exactly as they were planned. And it's funny how it seems that those stories are usually the most entertaining. And I have one I would like to share with you that was quite humiliating. And it was on a movie of the week. And I was playing the part of a cop, LAPD officer. And in this scene, I had to screech around a corner. We were downtown Hollywood, kind of border of Hollywood and Los Angeles, and come down this hill. So I came in from a left to right progression, sliding this around this corner and racing down the hill toward camera. And in this large intersection, I was supposed to skid this police car to a stop on a very specific mark. Open the door, climb out, pull my gun, aim camera right, and fire three shots, three blanks. These were full loads, blanks. That was the shot. That's what I needed to do. But it was imperative for camera, for the focus that they had on this long lens, that I had to stop my vehicle on this very specific mark. Now, when you're in the middle of an intersection, and you really have no reference to a mark, where, you know, it's not like you have a pole near, very close to you, or some object that you could gauge your distance from. This asphalt in this intersection had three or four manhole covers, a bunch of different oil stains and some cracks, and everything kind of looked very similar. There's nothing stood out like, yeah, I can use that as a definite mark. But I did find this one kind of funky shaped oil stain that lined up when I was parked kind of at a 45 degree angle, and it lined up like with the tip of my driver's side mirror. And I thought, well, if I could just place it right there where, as I'm looking to my left, and I could just touch my edge of my mirror to that funky looking oil stain that's out there about 15 feet to my left, I'll be on my mark. And then also, I was thinking, well, you know, I could do a long emergency brake slide coming into it to kind of scrub off some speed if I'm thinking I'm going to go too far, because it was kind of a slight downhill camber to this intersection. So I get up to my number one starting position, which was up the road, maybe 150 yards around the corner. And I've got I'm full figure. LAPD cop. I've got my gun belt on, and they gave me a prop watch to wear, and I got my lap belt on so I don't go sliding all over the seat. I'm really very funny about having my butt really, you know, cinched down tight in my lap belt, man. I don't like to slide across the seat at all. I want to feel like I'm a part of the vehicle. That seems to help me a lot. So I'm waiting around the corner, and they're going to shoot the rehearsal because, again, they worry about the skid marks, and they worry about, well, you know, back in the day when this was probably in 87 or 88, they were just kind of getting into the technology of CGI and being able to rotoscope out various things that are they don't want to see in the frame, such as skid marks. So they said, well, let's shoot this rehearsal. So, I mean, I'm pumped up. The adrenaline's flowing through my veins. I want to do a good job. I'm still young and building my reputation in the industry. And I come into this when they call action. They roll camera, ready, Corey, action. And I come flying down around the corner and hit the e-brake and do a very nice, in my opinion, for what my driving skills, my ability is. I did a very nice four-wheel drift around this intersection. I had nothing to hit. It wasn't like I'd have to have gone another 15, 20 yards to get into the curb on the other side. So it makes you brave when you got a lot of real estate. And I just came in at probably 50, 55 miles an hour, hit the e-brake, pitched it. And also what I was doing back in that day when I was driving, this was a Crown Vic, this police car, I would normally put more air pressure in my front tires than I had in my rear tires. Not very many stunt guys would do that. They would all have their back tires with the majority of the PSI. They'd have it pumped up to 55 or 60 pounds and run their front at about 32 to 35. I was putting 55, 60 pounds of pressure in my front tires and only running 35 or 40 in the back. Reason being, I wanted my front tires to have less of a pad on the asphalt. I wanted to have more of a crown on the tire. I didn't want so much rubber touching the asphalt. So when I pitched the vehicle sideways, the front end would want to slide easier across the asphalt and not have so much grip to pivot the ass end of the vehicle around. And it worked for me. It worked for me. And it gave me a certain style, I believe, when I was driving, that when I'd come around a corner, it was like a, sliding sideways, not coming into the turn, pitching a little question mark, slide, and then driving down the street. I like to try to, also what I would do is I would talk to the camera operator, and like this one, I was coming in camera left. And so I would ask the camera operator who was on this long, long lens. I said, what's your left frame line? Where do you see the nose of my car just coming into your shot? And he'd look in his lens. He's like, well, you see, Corey, you see that second pole up there? You got the building and the first pole and the second pole. Yeah, right there, that's where you just start to come into my frame. I said, all right, thanks, Bill. So when I got up to my number one, I knew where that second pole was. And my game plan was to already be committed into a big slide so that when I come into the frame, the camera's frame, I'm already initiating that big drift, that big sideways, skid. So it didn't look like I was driving straight and, oh, I forgot I need to make a right-hand turn here. Now I'll just do a funky little slide. And I've always thought that looked kind of silly. So my whole analogy was, let me let the audience believe that I was coming in so fast that I almost overslid and couldn't quite make the turn. But I always knew I was going to be making that turn. I always knew I was going to be going that direction. But I was just coming in so fast that I had to pitch the vehicle sideways to make that turn. Anyway, that's kind of been my signature of style of driving, police cars and any kind of car that we're doing an action chase. So I take off, I do this, what I felt was one of my best slides, and I thought, wow, I'm really impressing them now. I'm stoked. I'm proud of myself. I got my confidence now because I did really good. I could have washed out, could have made a fool of myself and spun out in the intersection and they'd have to cut cameras and go back to number one. And that's happened numerous times that to myself and to every stunt driver who's ever slid a car through an intersection, there's those times you wash out. You just overcommit, overslide, you go into a curb, or you just end up throwing a 180 when you only wanted to, pitch the car sideways and do a nice drift. It happens. It's just like hell, professional basketball players sometimes shoot for the hoop and they miss. It's just part of the business. It's just part of what happens. So I was very proud of myself. I did a very good slide. I was coming down the hill towards camera, racing down the hill, and very confident. And I looked up ahead, and I saw those manhole covers. I saw, as I was getting closer, I saw, oh, I'm going really fast. I better hit the emergency brake, start doing this long e-brake slide, and very gradually go into all fours to start to apply the front calipers so it would start to slow the vehicle down a little bit. And I saw that mark. I saw that funky looking grease oil stain in the middle of the intersection. I'm like, there it is. And I already had my eye on my side mirror, and I just kind of like you would pull up to a stop sign, to the white paint line on the road. I was doing the same thing. I was just going to come and let my mirror just touch that mark. and I slid up, and but the back tires were screeching because I had the e-brake locked up, but my front tires were just gradually slowing down the vehicle. But it didn't look like that. It looked like I, you know, came in and screeched to a stop and bam, came to a stop. And I'm like, oh my God, I nailed it. I'm right on my mark. I was so excited. And I'm like, okay, Corey, go on with it. And I hit my lap belt. I flick open my door. I start to jump out of the vehicle. I'm now going to pull my 9mm Beretta, my gun, and I take aim, camera right, and I go to fire my shots, and the car starts rolling away from me. Because, like an idiot, I forgot to put the car in park. I was so excited that I'd hit my mark. I knew that I had to jump out right away, open the door, release my lap belt, pull my weapon, take aim, camera right. I guess I just had too many things on my mind and I couldn't process them all and left out one of the most important things to do. Put the car in park. And this Crown Vic, I don't know if it was because it was a slight downhill cambern, or maybe when I stepped out, I pushed against the floor mat, maybe it pushed into the accelerator, but this damn car, it was like, I'm going to humiliate Corey, and it actually picked up speed. Because I was thinking about running after it to jump in, to, you know, throw my foot on the brake and stop the vehicle, because it was going toward the crew. Just off camera, there was a crane, there were grip carts and electrical carts and, you know, 15, 20 crew members. Even the script supervisor was sitting in her little chair watching, and this police car starts going right for her. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to kill somebody. This is my fault. What do I do? And I just stood there like helpless, watching my career fade away, watching my career be taken away from me from this damn Crown Vic police car. It's going to take out the whole crew. Nothing I could do. And everyone scatters. And thank God that script supervisor who was sitting in her little chair, she must have been like an Olympic gymnast or something, because she just damn near cartwheeled out of the way. Very athletic. I was shocked because she was not a young woman, but she was very, very limber and very athletic. Thank God, because she dove out of the way, and the police car goes and kind of veers to the right just a little bit, and there are two motorcycle police bikes parked along the curb. It goes right for the motorcycle cops' bikes, hits both of them, ba-bam, ba-bam, knocks them over, kind of changes its direction and goes about another 15 feet and crashes right into the craft service table. And just spills all the food and the coffee and everything, goes thrown up onto the sidewalk. And finally, the car stalls and comes to a stop. And I'm just, I mean, people are yelling and panicking and, oh my God. And I'm just, I dropped my head. I thought, that's it. I'm done in this industry. I'm done. And you know, nobody knew that I had actually hit my mark and did really an incredible job. I was right on the money. Nobody knew. All of that just was forgotten or not even addressed or acknowledged because I almost, you know, killed the entire film crew. So those things are recoverable. Those things are, you know, mistakes are made and things like that do happen. There was a time, working for Pee Wee Pamonte on a show, and I had to be T-boned. That's when another vehicle hits you in the side. I was driving a van. I had to be T-boned by Eric Norris, Chuck Norris's son. And he hit me so damn hard and hit me in the back axle that it snapped off my rear wheel. And that rear wheel, it spun me into a 360, and that rear wheel took off down the street. And as it took off down the street, it was wobbling, but it then started to bounce. And this wheel going, I don't know, maybe 40, 45 miles per hour, started bouncing. And it bounced up over a chain link fence, went down this hillside, and went right onto the Santa Monica Freeway, right in front of a motorcycle cop who grabbed his brakes and almost did a nose wheelie to avoid hitting this tire. It wasn't maybe 15, 20 minutes later, our set is just swarmed with six or seven police cars. And they right on, they didn't care that we're shooting a TV show. They didn't care that we were rolling cameras. And this motorcycle cop obviously called the LAPD and said, hey, there's a film crew there and one of their tires almost killed me. And so they came screeching onto our set and they jump out. And I'll never forget, this cop comes right into the middle of the crew and goes, who's the first assistant director? And the first AD steps up and goes, I am. And he points at the van. He goes, who was driving that van right there? And I look at, and the guy looks at me. He looked at a couple other people and kind of looked at me, and I threw my hand in the air and I go, I was, sir. I go, and I point at Eric Norris and I go, and that man right there, he hit me on purpose and knocked my tire off. I want to throw Eric Norris under the bus and let him get in trouble, not me. So yeah, there's some unexpected things that happen and things go wrong. And, you know, it's just, it, man, it's part of the stunt business. There are many things that go wrong. Like this time I was working on the hit TV show, Hollywood Beat. And I was driving this convertible Cadillac, which coincidentally was the same year and model as the Boss Hog Cadillac on the Dukes of Hazzard, which I had driven many, many times. And I was very familiar with this car. And I actually think I impressed my boss, John Moyo, when we did the pilot for Hollywood Beat on Hollywood Boulevard. And I had to take off in reverse and pitch a reverse 180 across Hollywood Boulevard is all this, we had some stunt drivers that were doing cross traffic. Some were coming from right to left and some from left to right. And they would, you know, be blocking me. But as soon as they would cross each other and it would open up the gate and I could throw my reverse 180 and thread right between the middle of them. And again, tire pressure. That's when I pumped up my front tires to 65 PSI, each front tire. So I could really whip that big vehicle around. It's 19 feet long. It's a heavy car. You know, convertibles, they make very, very stout, very strong, big solid frame. But I had, you know, many years of practice driving that same exact type of convertible Cadillac and was able to whip that reverse 180 and impress my boss that night, that Friday night on Hollywood Beat. But when he wasn't so impressed was when I was driving that same vehicle. And in the story we're telling, we're doing a chase on the top of a three-story parking structure. Now, I've told this story, and I was once corrected that, well, Corey, that's not a three-story. You're not on the third story. So let me let you make your own decision. If you're on the ground and you drive up, are you on the second story or are you on the first story? Because I look at the ground as being the first story, the first level, and then you drive up a ramp and go up to the next plateau. To me, that's not the first level. That's the second story. And then if you go up one more level, that's to me the third. So either I'm wrong, and it could be that because I'm wrong, usually more than I'm right. But that could be. So in your own mind's eye, you can envision two different levels of the parking structure. People park on the very bottom, and then they park on the next level up, which I call the second level, and then there's the third. So we're up top. Let's just say that. I'm on the top of this parking structure. And in the story we're telling, we're chasing someone, and I make a wrong turn, and I'm going to try to stop before I crash through the guardrail around the outer perimeters of this parking structure, and the vehicle is going to teeter-totter. And Jack Scalia is the passenger in the story, and he the whole time was kind of oblivious that we're in this chase because he was looking at a magazine. He's reading a magazine, and because it's a comedy. It was a comedy. This Hollywood Beat show was pretty funny. And so he doesn't know that we even crashed through this guardrail and we're teeter-tottering off this parking structure. And then when he lowers the magazine and sees that what's happening and that the bad guys got away, then Jay Ocavone, who was the driver is frustrated. So he takes his fist and he pounds it on the dash. And that was just enough to send the Cadillac, the convertible Cadillac, off the edge where it was going to fall. In my story, I say three stories. It falls from the rooftop of the parking structure and drops down about 30 feet and crashes right into the windshield of another car that's parked there that is their sergeant's car, you know, their boss's car. So that's the gag. That's the story. But we were going to have me drive this convertible Cadillac with the stunt double, Jerry Spicer, who's doubling Jack Scalia, riding beside me. And we're going to cable this thing off. We're going to cable off this Cadillac so it just crashes through the guardrail and just comes to a stop where it's teetering off the edge, where I can't go off the edge. And then they were going to take us out, put some dummies in it, and hit a quick release so the vehicle would then be released and gravity would take its thing and would pull it down and it would fall and go into the windshield of the car parked below. So we were going to do it in edits, in different shots, do it in pieces and then edit it together. So I was concerned about driving this Cadillac toward that end, this convertible Cadillac, no roll cage. All I had was a lap belt. And I forgot, I needed to tell you that there is also a passenger in the back seat. This gentleman, a stuntman named Gray Johnson, who was doubling an actor seated directly behind me. So I've got Gray Johnson in the back seat. I got Jerry Spicer in the passenger seat, and I'm driving this convertible Cadillac. And I park it up on the top, and the special effects man came in with this cable. I believe it was like 5/8, or it was. They told me that this cable, half inch? It was pretty big. And they said that it would hold 40,000 pounds. It was really, really strong. And what we did, because we did this on the Dukes of Hazzard, and it works, is they take a tractor tire or a big, huge semi-truck tire, and you wrap the cable around the tire, you know, on the inside, not around the outside of it, just around one of the walls of the tire. And then they would put some NicroPress sleeves and crimp it down. And then they do the same on the other side. And that one side would go and be, we did it to a water truck. We cabled off to a water truck that was full of water. So it was very, very, very heavy. And then the other side of the cable, we would wrap around the frame of our vehicle and we would NicroPress that. Then you take another cable between 3 to 4 foot long, how much you think it's going to stretch out that tire, and you connect the two cables. So when the vehicle comes to the end of the cable, it starts to stretch this tire out, and then you have eventually you have one straight line of cable. Those three cables all become a straight line, you know, because they're interlocked. And it works. And the idea is it takes the snap out of the cable because, you know, you could take a cable that'll hold or lift 40,000 pounds, but you take 1,000 pounds and drop it 10 feet, it's going to snap that cable. They're designed for a deadlift, not something that has snap on it. So we had explained that to the special effects man that was our methodology. That's how we wanted to have it rigged up. So I don't know if they were a little perturbed because, you know, the stunt guys are telling them how to do their job, but that's how, and I had told my boss, John Moyle, that's how we had done this before on the Dukes of Hazzard when Russell Solberg was driving and I was passenger out there at Indian Dunes, and we had to go toward the edge of a cliff and skid to a stop right at the edge of the cliff, and we used that same system. And so I knew what it was like to be in the passenger seat and having somebody drive, and Russell, I don't know, that day, but I mean, maybe he hated his life and was trying to commit suicide. I'm not sure, because he went awfully, awfully fast toward the edge of that cliff. And I'm like, I'm thinking we're going to go right off the edge, but it was a very abrupt stop. It was not just a tug. It was very abrupt, but it didn't snap your neck so bad, but it worked. That whole system worked. It's old school. It's reliable. So now we are now on Hollywood Beat and the effects guys are rigging it up. And I just kind of walk over there to see how they're doing it. Because I was also at that point in my career that I was going to this company called Versailles, where they actually, you know, thread the cable and make them and make all different types of cable connectors. And I knew that I had been educated that you want to use a Nicropress, not a Crosby's. Crosby's are the one that looks like a horseshoe and a saddle. It's like a U-bolt. And they put over, and then they have the two nuts and you tighten them down. And that is not what you want to use in a situation like this. And also I knew that, and that's what these special effects men were using. They weren't using Nicropress sleeves. They were using these Crosby's, and also they were flip-flopping them. They were putting the saddle on the main line and the U-bolt on the tail. But then the next Crosby, they would flip it over and put the U-bolt on the main line and the saddle on the tail. And the theory is that U-bolt, as you crimp it down, it stresses because it's digging into the main line of the cable, and you don't want that. It weakens it. And so I just kind of mentioned that to them. I go, hey, guys, we're not really supposed to flip-flop those Crosby's, aren't we? I mean, because it doesn't the U-bolt stress out the main line? And shouldn't we really be using some Nicropress? And the guy rolled out from underneath the Cadillac and threw the tools down and says, if you know so much, why don't you do it yourself? And walked off. And I was like, oh my gosh, I pissed off the effects guy. You know, and maybe I should have just kept my mouth shut, but, I was concerned, you know, about my own safety and the safety of Jerry Spicer and Gray Johnson. And, that's why I spoke up. So I thought I'd better go and tell John Moyo, my boss, what just happened. And so I did. And he went and he spoke to the effects guys, and I could see him in a distance. They were having a heated argument about it. And then all of a sudden, you know, John came, I see them going back toward the vehicle. And then I see John come up to me, and John said that he got everything straightened out. They're going to put the Crosby's on, so that they're not flip-flopped. They don't have Nicropress big enough to go over the size of that cable, but they said, if it'll make you feel better, Corey, they'll take additional cable and they will go to the opposite side of the frame of the vehicle and they'll tie off to another truck. That's what they were using for the dead man. For like we used on the Dukes of Hazzard, we used a water truck full of water, where they were using these crew cabs, these four-door crew cab trucks that are not that heavy. And I was even worried about this Cadillac pulling the crew cab, you know, and us going over the edge. So I was even nervous about that. It was a miserable day that day. It was a lot of stress. It was middle of the summer. It was, you know, damn near 100 degrees outside. And it was just very stressful that day. And they said, we'll take another cable and we'll tie off to another crew cab. And just in case this cable does snap, we'll make that cable a foot longer and then it'll kick in. And that'll just be an additional safety cable if that'll make your stunt guys, you know, happy. And I said, yeah, John, that's a great idea. So I back up the Cadillac, and as I back it up, this team of effects guys now, there was like four of them. They had to coil the cable up as I was backing up. And they wanted to see a rehearsal camera, wanted to get an idea, because they were also filming from a crane down on the ground looking up. And this crane was going to lead me in. And they wanted to see, well, how long is it going to take Corey from, you know, going across the parking structure to get to the barricade that he's going to bust through? And so we're going to do a rehearsal and not hit the barricade, because they had scored it. They had taken these saws and scored the metal, so, you know, made slits through it. So when I would hit it, it would bust open easily. And I do this rehearsal going maybe 15 miles per hour. And as I approached the guardrail, I stomped them on the emergency brake to make a screeching sound and kind of scrub off some of the speed. And just before I was going to crash through the guardrail, I hit all fours and stopped about 2 feet from it. So they saw how fast I was going. And they said, okay, we're ready to do this. This next time will be picture. We're going to roll cameras. And so we were backing up, and Jerry Spicer was asking me. He was nervous. He's like, "You, this is going to be okay. You sure these cables are going to hold? And are you?" And I said, he goes, "What if that tire rips in half?" I said, "Jerry, we did the same exact stunt on the Dukes of Hazzard. Russell Solberg was driving. We're at Indian Dunes." I told him the whole story. I said, "How, it, dude, this is 100%. This is, we're going to be fine. You're going to feel a little bit of a tug and it's going to just come to a snap, you know, a little bit of a snap and we'll be fine. We'll come to a stop." So they roll cameras, they call action. I take off, same speed, 15 miles an hour, maybe a little bit faster. And as I got closer, I could see my other skid marks because they were already on the cement surface. And I hit my emergency brake and skidded right over the tops of those. And just when I thought I'm going to bust into that guardrail, I was going to let my front tires go off the edge and then just stomp on the brake a little bit to kind of scrub off some of the momentum. And I was a little bit late on that. And it went over the edge and we didn't even feel a tug. I didn't feel any kind of resistance at all. We just drove right off the edge of this parking structure and fell. I say three stories because it sounds more exciting, but we fell off the top of the parking structure. And I'm like, "Oh my God, I can't believe it. We went off the edge and we're going straight down for this parked vehicle. Thank God it was there. 'Cause it was like a, you know, going into a metal fall pad. It, when we slammed into the windshield, it absorbed a lot of the impact. And I was pushing against the steering wheel as hard as I could. And 'cause I didn't have shoulder straps, I just had a lap belt. But Jerry Spicer, he was holding a magazine and he wasn't prepared for us to go off the edge. So he wasn't bracing himself. And he just, his face just smashed right into the dashboard, just bam, and just blew out his nose and his mouth, and just blood everywhere. And Gray Johnson smacked his face, who was behind me, into the back of my seat, my headrest, and really hurt himself, his jaw, and snapped his neck. And I thought to myself, as we were balancing there straight up and down, I thought, "Oh my God, if this thing starts to roll over, I'm going to get crushed by the car that we've just crashed into." And I remember reaching down for my lap belt, like I'm going to pull my lap belt and dive out over my door to the ground, which was like, I don't know, maybe 7 feet, 6 or 7 feet to the asphalt. And I remember thinking to myself, "God dang it, that asphalt's going to be so hot because, you know, it's just been a hot summer day. And which is worse, Corey, being crushed by the vehicle or getting onto the hot asphalt?" And I'm like, "I'm going to go for the asphalt." And just then the car we had crashed into, it must have kicked into neutral because it started to roll backwards. And I felt my car, you know, the Cadillac starting to fall back toward its wheels. And so I just rode it out and we came to a rest. So that freaked out everybody. That wasn't supposed to happen. And the camera operator on the crane named Lee Nakahara actually captured the whole thing. And I remember talking to him years later on the set of another show. And that story came up and he goes, "Yeah, I got the whole thing." And he goes, "I knew that was going to happen." I go, "What do you mean you knew that was going to happen?" He goes, "Oh yeah, I just knew you guys were going to go off the edge and go all the way down to the bottom." I said, "Hey, Lee, if you're so psychic, maybe next time you could come tap me on the shoulder and let me know. I'll listen to you. I'll believe you." Okay. So I thought that was kind of funny. But what wasn't funny now was trying to figure out what went wrong. That was when the tempers were getting very heated. I was mad. John Morial was mad. Everyone's pointing fingers at everybody. And well, what had happened, because there was a little investigation that went into this, part of it by myself when I stormed back up onto the up the stairs to go to the top of the parking structure to look at the tire and what had happened. Well, apparently they did not tighten those Crosbys down all the way. There were six of them, three on one side and three on the other. And that weight of that Cadillac was enough to pull the tail all the way through the Crosby. So it just unfed. It just pulled it through and we went right off the edge. When the second cable kicked in, they had tied that off underneath this other crew cab that had a trailer hitch that had a half inch plate of steel at an angle. And they had gone down underneath that plate of steel and wrapped up to the frame. Well, that plate of steel had a sharp edge to it, and it sliced the cable. The cable looked like you'd taken, a banana and took a knife and just kind of slit it at an angle. It just carved it. It was a very clean carve, and it kind of curled at the end. All that force and happening so quickly and going up against that sharp steel. So the first cable, it just unfed, and because it was the same length as it was, and those Crosbys were laying up there on the rooftop on the third story, and the other cable was cut in half. So we ended up going the following week. We had to go into Aaron Spelling, into his office, because this was a major, major accident on set. And, three people could have been killed, and he wanted to know what had happened. And it was very awkward and very uncomfortable to be in that room and have to, cause I got called in, and already in the room was the special effects, the head of the special effects department, and John Moyo, and I think a couple of attorneys, and all businessmen suits, and all have that same intense look on their faces. And they asked me what had happened. And I told them the story. And the special effects guy says, well, we were under the impression that you were going to be going 1 mile an hour. And John Moyo just jumped up. He goes, are you kidding me? You walk 3 miles an hour, and this was a chase scene, and you saw the rehearsal. He went to my defense. I love that man. He can get a little heated up, but when he's got your back, he's got your back. So that was a very intense thing in my career. And boy, did that story circulate through the stunt industry like wildfire. It was by the following week, it was a 6-story building, and my car was on fire, and it did a flip and a half and crashed to the asphalt. I couldn't believe how that story had gotten blown all out of proportion. But heck, you know what? Can't let the truth get in the way of a good story. But that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. That's the way it went down. So listen, I appreciate you listening to my stunt stories. I hope you are enjoying these stories that I'm telling you. And if you are, if you would, please consider subscribing and tell your friends for me about Stunt Stories. Help me spread the word. It'd be greatly appreciated. Thanks so much.